Talk Politics with Governor Mike Beebe is brought to you by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas, because business matters. Impact Management Group, public relations and public affairs, over a decade of issue advocacy success. Connect Arkansas, empowering entrepreneurs and Arkansans through greater utilization of the internet. And ConwayArkansas.org. Get smart. Visit ConwayArkansas.org and see why Conway is the smart choice for business, education, and more.
Welcome to this latest edition of Talk Politics with Governor Mike Beebe. Governor, thank you for being with us, as always. If you want to be part of the conversation, we already have a lot of questions in queue, but you can use the Talk Politics hashtag through Twitter or Facebook, and we will try to get those questions addressed. Let's begin with the fact that you were in Puerto Rico this past weekend for Southern Governors Association Convention. Business, pleasure, what did you accomplish?
Well, it's billed as business, but I mean, if you're in Puerto Rico, you gotta enjoy the weather at least. You get the ocean breezes, so it was cooler, but I understand that I miss a great weekend in terms of what we've had weather-wise compared to where we are. The primary focus of it with the Southern Governors and the Governor of Puerto Rico was the one who was in charge of the agenda, was trade with Latin America. Trade with Central America, Latin America, and certainly the Caribbean countries. So there were a lot of panel discussions about increasing trade. One of the things I've been talking about for a long time is increasing our agricultural exports, particularly to some countries who are cash-strapped right now, but would buy more of our products if their economies turned around. Some countries are experiencing some growth and will have some additional capital to be able to purchase Arkansas agricultural products. And so there was a lot of discussion about that.
But nothing kind of in concrete, nothing new to report?
Did we sign a treaty with Cuba?
Not like that.
Is that what you're asking?
Well,
no.
Or whomever.
No, that didn't happen. But the extent to which Cuba will get any more money is largely dependent on the federal policy.
Let's talk about some political developments of the past week. Let's start with the Herb Rule incident. Mm-hmm. Late last week, he was picked up on suspicion of DWI.
Sure.
Maybe just your initial reaction to that.
Surprised. I was surprised, saddened that even occurred. However, I withhold judgment, just as anybody else should, until a trial. Because, frankly, he's indicated that... He was not under the influence to violate the law, and we'll wait and see what the trial says.
Does it become problematic for the Democratic Party, for Democratic candidates because of
this?
Well,
I still support him, but the question's going to be what impact this does have, and there's no question it'll have some impact. I mean, these kinds of things always do.
Do you think there'll be any pressure to ask him to step down
No.
as the nominee?
No.
No. Should there be?
No. He's people make mistakes. If he's guilty and if he made a mistake, then the best thing to do is to acknowledge it and go forward. But I suspect he'll want a trial. That's what I'm hearing.
One more thing on the Rule situation. He proposed to the Association of Arkansas Counties, you may have read about this in the Democrat Gazette, that Arkansas counties be able to sell naming rights to raise revenue, such as Garland County could be Oakland County, Benton County could be Walmart County.
No, I'm not familiar with
it. And he said this in all seriousness.
I'm not familiar with that, and certainly that wouldn't be anything that a congressman or that the federal government would have any jurisdiction over. I don't have any knowledge of what he said in that regard.
Another political debate last week, we got a couple of questions on this centered around the Republican Party platform to eliminate the income tax and replace it with a, quote, more equitable method of taxation. What do you think a more equitable method of taxation would be?
I don't think there is more equitable. You can always argue about the equity of our income tax structure. And we can always argue about whether the rates should be changed in some fashion. I think those are legitimate points of debate. But the income tax was designed to be more equitable than a flat, for example, sales tax. And my top priority in terms of tax reduction continues to be removal of the sales tax on food. We've taken it from 6 you know, down to 1.5, and we need to continue to attack that as a top priority. I think that's the most regressive and unfair tax we have, is the sales tax on food. And so that's my top priority. Now, if you're going to eliminate the income tax, you better figure out where you're going to get a couple billion, not million, a couple billion dollars just to stay where we are. Just to stay where we are. You know, all this political rhetoric, and whether it's a Republican platform or anybody else just running around out there talking about tax cuts, they talk about it. I've done it. Nobody has proposed and guided more tax cuts in the history of Arkansas than I have. So when it comes to credibility about tax cuts, I'd argue with any of them. I think I've done more to reduce the tax burden of the people of Arkansas than any Republican or Democrat or independent or anybody else in history. So I think I've got some credibility to talk about tax cuts, and I can out-tax cut the rest of them. However, we do it in a responsible manner that makes sure that we don't cut it so fast or so deep that it impacts essential services, primarily education, which is our top priority. But then you've also got public safety. You've got to make sure bad guys get locked up and you can afford to pay for that. You've got to make sure that the safety net's there for our seniors, for people in nursing homes, and for our children through programs such as Our Kids First. So you got a lot of issues to handle on the state level, and it has to be handled with, when you're talking about tax cuts, in a responsible manner that takes all of that into consideration. All the other stuff, you know, people talk about it to run for office, and I think people get sick of promises that some folks make and never try to fulfill them. Promises that people make about, I'm going to do this, and oftentimes it's transparently irresponsible on the front end. And yet they continue to make those promises. That's why people are so cynical about politicians. That's why people are so cynical about politics. And I still maintain that you tell people the truth and you under-promise and over-deliver rather than going the other way, you get rewarded for it. I mean, I can't think of why I've received the kind of support I've received in Arkansas except for that phenomenon.
Let's talk maybe a little bit more generally about tax reform than not necessarily
sure.
tax cuts. Could you envision, particularly if you have to work with a Republican majority in one or both chambers of the state legislature, could you envision reorganizing some of the income tax brackets like Davy Carter and Jonathan Dismay have proposed?
Davy Carter is a very intelligent, thoughtful, responsible, pragmatic member of the General Assembly. I have enormous respect and admiration and genuine liking for Davy Carter. I hope that doesn't get him in trouble in Cabot. having said that, of course I work with Davy Carter. Now, that doesn't mean that that's not a carte blanche. And I don't know of any specific proposal that Davy Carter's come up with. What he's tried to do is gather information, which I think is always helpful, about the existing tax structure, and then do an objective analysis of how it can be better. Better on in terms of both the taxpayers and better in terms of the state budget. And I'm open-minded, and I'll always sit down with Davey and talk about those things.
Could you see maybe a higher tax rate?
Don't speculate. I'll sit down with him, and we'll talk about the specifics, but let's don't be hypothetical about what those specifics are until
we know.
Well, we
can go hypothetical all day.
You always like to go hypothetical.
I do like going hypothetical. Helps me understand where your thinking is.
My thinking. My thinking is that I am extremely conservative when it comes to money. I'm a fiscal conservative. So I am very tight with our budget and tight with what we do. But that involves both ends of the spectrum, both being tight with making sure that we don't overspend, but also being tight with making sure that we don't do crazy things that adversely affect our ability to maintain our essential services in our state budget.
You made a comment last week, too. I think you spoke to the Association of Arkansas Counties about Arkansans paying a hidden tax for health care for the working poor.
Yeah.
Maybe explain that comment, expound on that a little bit.
Well, you know, I chaired a hospital board for 10 years, Central Arkansas General in Searcy, which now no longer exists, but that happened long after I got off the hospital board. We saw every day what uncompensated care does. And when I say uncompensated care, people can imagine how many people don't have any insurance at all and don't have the ability or don't choose not to pay? Well, they show up at the hospitals anyway, or doctor's offices for that matter, and they're treated. They have to be treated. oftentimes they show up in the emergency room where the costs are the highest. And oftentimes they show up sicker because they didn't go check on something earlier since they didn't have the money to pay for it anyway. And so what happens is hospitals and physicians and all these folks provide free medical care, but they make up for it somewhere else. You have to. I mean, you can't run at a deficit and stay in operation. So what happens is that increased cost on the rest of us who have health insurance or who are paying our health care bills, because they have to offset the losses from the free care that they have to give because people show up and don't pay anything, don't have any insurance. So I call that a hidden tax, because your insurance goes up, my insurance goes up, everybody else's health care costs go up to offset the losses from the free care, from the uncompensated care. And that's what I refer to as a hidden tax.
So what's the solution?
More people need to be paying more of their fair share. Now, I mean, that can be done a number of ways. One of the things that they're talking about is Medicaid expansion for the working poor. And as I've said over and over again, if you want to have a debate in Washington about they shouldn't do this, that this expansion is too much of a debt on our country, that it saddles our children and our grandchildren with a debt that they're not going to be able to pay, that's a good, legitimate argument. And Lord knows I've for years lamented the federal debt just as much as anybody else. I've talked about it before it got, I talked about it in 05 when I was first running for governor. But that's a separate issue. We can't vote on that, okay? I mean, that's Congress has to vote on that. Now, I'm free to talk about it. So if you're going to have that Medicaid expansion, the question is, does Arkansas get left out? Well, I've still got a concern about that because I want to make sure that if we do take advantage of the federal government paying for covering the working poor, as you say, will Arkansas have the autonomy to be able to say no if our fiscal house requires it when we start having to pay 10% of it? You know, the first 3 years, the federal government pays 100% of it. And then it ratchets up to the state pays 10% of this increased cost. Well, it's still a good deal, 90 to 10, mm-hmm. but we still need to have the flexibility to be able to say if we can't afford it, that we just can't afford it. So I'm still awaiting official word on that, although we're getting some preliminary word on it.
What's the preliminary word?
Preliminary word is that apparently states are going to have the flexibility.
Okay. I have talked to a number of legislators on both sides of the political mm-hmm. aisle who sure. have said maybe we look at doing something a little bit more incremental, maybe not 250,000 potential uninsured
sure.
Arkansans. Maybe
sure.
we look at 50,000 or 100,000 or wherever a
sure.
income level threshold sure. might be. Is that something you're open, receptive to? And
well, number one, we don't. That's part of what we need clarification of. Is it even an option? Number two, we're not going to do any of this unless the Republicans want to do it. And the reason for that is it takes 3/4 vote to do this. So this is going to be a joint effort. Republicans and Democrats are going to have to agree on this, or it's not going to happen. I can't do it. I can't do it by myself. It takes an appropriation to get this done. So whether it's somewhere in between those 200,000 Arkansans, whether it's 100,000 Arkansans, whether it's none, will be a decision the General Assembly is going to have to make in the appropriation process. Because under our Constitution, this appropriation takes a 3/4 vote of each House. Both houses have to do this 3/4. And I think under anybody's scenario, whatever happens in November, it's going to be close to 50-50. There's going to be close to 50% Democrats and close to 50% Republicans one way or the other, just like there is right now. So you're not going to increase Medicaid and cover this working poor group that you're talking about. And perhaps save hospitals, because some of them, you know where they are on
ours. Right.
Without both the Republicans and the Democrats in the General Assembly, or at least 75% of them, saying that we ought to do this.
No supermajorities is what you're saying. There's not going to be any supermajorities by one party in the
legislature. Oh, heavens no.
Let me, one more Medicaid question let me ask you. Can you give us an update? We've had a little bit more than a month of the new payment initiative that you guys have started. It started on July 1. Have you gotten any kind of update?
Well, it actually starts in October.
There's
nothing's come in yet in terms of being able to. And they've only started with one or two diagnostic areas. There's
right.
nine ultimately proposed to be folded in. But it's way too early to see.
So you haven't gotten any kind of update as to how that's going?
I haven't gotten any kind of update as to any cost savings, if that's what you're talking about. So far, everything's on track. But October 1st is really when they're talking about the implementation to the point that you're going to start seeing some difference in payments.
All right, we got a couple of questions to get your reaction to the Paul Ryan selection for vice president. What do you make of that?
Well, I don't know much about Paul Ryan except what I've read in the paper. Cutting Medicare scares me a little bit, particularly as I get older. But, you know, so many of our seniors depend on Medicare. I mean, they paid in, and so Medicare is a very important health program, health insurance program, health care program for everybody over 65. It's important to seniors. And any significant changes that result in serious cuts to that, I think, are problematic and troublesome. And if I understand his track record, that he wants some cuts in that regard in Medicare.
Yeah, we got a question on that basically alludes to the fact that it might create a voucher system for Medicare. So you would not be in favor that type of change or reforms?
Well, as I understand it, that voucher system amounts to a significant cut, but we'll have to find it. I think a lot of people don't want to be fair when it comes to the politics of a presidential race or a vice presidential candidate. I think the press will ferret out for the American people whether that system is a significant cut in Medicare or not. And if it's a significant cut, yeah, I got a problem.
All right, we got a couple questions coming in through Twitter here. This is from Bradford Caldwell. What other countries does the governor hope to attract business from besides China and France?
Everywhere we can. We've been able to attract some German, some Danish, and some Indian companies. We'll continue focusing there. But there's not a place in the world where we don't think we can be competitive for folks that want to do business in North America. One of the things that we talked about specifically in this conference this last weekend in Puerto Rico was what's changing in China and some other developing countries for that matter. And what's changing is that there's a greater and greater need on those countries' companies' parts, as well as our companies, American companies that have gone over there, to come back to the United States. And the reason is twofold primarily. One, wages are significantly increasing in China. So that huge gap between where they were paying their labor almost nothing and what we pay in the United States is narrowing. Now, it's still a gap, mm-hmm. but the gap has narrowed. Secondly, transportation costs continue to go up, logistics costs, whether it's in fuel or anything else for that matter. And so it's more expensive than it was for them to manufacture goods in China, for example, and then ship them over here and sell them in the United States. And then you're getting this patriotic, what I call patriotic. Some folks disagreed with me down there in Puerto Rico, but I call it a patriotic response. You see it on some of the national news programs where they announce that some company in America is making something that is competing with a Chinese company, and then all of a sudden, once you publicize that through the news media, Americans start buying that stuff. And I recall a specific thing on one of the news channels that there was a nail manufacturing company in Georgia, I think it was, that produces nails. And when they ran a segment on the national news, he had to hire like 30 times more people than he went from like 5 to 100 or something like that, or 5 to 120 or more people, just because the publicity of Buy America and America, a small American company making these products, caused a lot of people to start buying from him. So I think there's several factors that are causing either American companies that have gone to China because of cheaper labor, or Chinese companies that want to do business in America, has created a greater opportunity for manufacturing to be done now in North America, and specifically in the United States. And of course, we want to compete. We want to compete with those other 49 states. If they're going to come to North America, we just assume they set up shop in Arkansas and create jobs for Arkansans. So we'll recruit from anywhere in the world. And so far, Yeah, the caller's question probably was because we've just been to China and been to France
right.
this year. But Germany, Denmark, we've talked to some Spanish companies. Certainly India has made an investment here. Japan. So we'll compete with any of them.
You're competing not only with other states, you're competing with Mexico, too. Very competitive.
That one is a problem. You know, what's happened in Fort Smith is just heartbreaking to me with Whirlpool. I think it was short-sighted on Whirlpool's part. I'm sorry, I'm not happy with Whirlpool. I think what they've done is going to Mexico for that cheap labor and taking all those American jobs down there is in my opinion, it's very disheartening. And you know, they've got all kinds of trouble in Mexico. Civil unrest, criminal justice issues. You know what's going on down there with crime and the drug wars and all that stuff. I'm very unhappy with the companies that pick up and go to Mexico.
Have you communicated this to Whirlpool executives?
I communicated it to them when they were here with me and when they were talking about doing it. I'm pretty pretty candid about that stuff. What are they going to do to me?
Yeah. What are prospects right now for that Fort Smith facility? And you've also got a big Mitsubishi plant up there.
Well, the Mitsubishi deal is a totally different deal. Mitsubishi built a brand new state-of-the-art multi-hundreds of million dollar plant. It's just sitting there because of two things. One, in order for the wind industry to continue to be competitive, they depended on that wind energy tax credit that the feds have granted, but now appears to be running out. And so that's one problem. The second one is they're in a lawsuit with GE over patent rights, over proprietary technology, if you will. And as long as that's in the federal courts, there's an uncertainty on their part. But they employed thousands of at least hundreds of people in the construction of that, which was good for a while because it was construction jobs in Fort Smith. But the fact that they don't have 200 or 300 people in that plant working and producing wind energy components certainly is a disappointment. But that's a totally different issue than the Whirlpool issue. Now, on the Whirlpool plant, Fort Smith and the leadership and the economic development folks in Fort Smith, together with us and our people in AEDC, are doing everything we can to market that facility. The problem is Whirlpool still owns it, and they don't want it marketed for a competitor.
Mm-hmm.
So to some extent, we're hamstrung by what they're willing to do with it. It's almost like the problem we had down in El Dorado a couple years ago with Pilgrim Pride.
Right. We got a question here from James about the drought declaration that you signed. We got some rain, but I don't think it's going to be enough to
right.
necessarily end that. If the drought continues longer, do you expect or foresee extending this time period to, I guess, help out beyond the 30 days?
Well, yeah, I think we'll react accordingly. You know, it's particularly, the drought's bad on everybody. It's bad on poultry and it's bad on our row crops, but it's particularly bad on our cattle farmers because they don't have hay and they can't buy hay. Well, they can, but it's so expensive that it's really tough. Our row crop farmers see input costs go way up. Most of them are irrigating, or a lot of it's irrigation. So they continue to have water. It just costs them that much more because of the drought, because of the energy bills necessary to be able to irrigate the crops. So that hurts our row crop farmers in that fashion. The input costs go way up, so their margins go down. Certainly in poultry, the heat hurts that as well. But the one segment of agriculture that seems to suffer the most from this is our cattle industry. And so we're looking at some options to try to provide some relief for them.
Such as?
Such as maybe some disaster relief in a program comparable to what Clinton did back 30 years ago, 25 years ago.
All right. We have another listener that says, to tell you that if you are over the age of 55, you are safe from Paul Ryan's Medicare reform.
Good.
So
good.
You're in the clear. You
good.
Can worry about everyone else. How about
good.
That?
And that's exactly the kind of thing I think we need to be talking about, is ferret out what the specifics are so that we're not just talking about speculation or hypotheticals, and let's get specifics. Now, something you didn't ask, whether it's Paul Ryan or Joe Biden, whether it's Barack Obama or Mitt Romney, we're going to, my number one concentration is Arkansas, is to take care of Arkansas. And whoever gets elected up there, we'll work with or fight with, depending on how they treat Arkansas.
All right, last question for you. Did you watch any of the Olympics?
Mm-hmm.
Your favorite Olympic moment? Did you have one?
You know, my favorite thing in the Olympics, and I'm different from, I guess, most people, my favorite thing's track. And my favorite track event is a sprint relay. So I was disappointed. The 400 meter relay in track is one of my favorite things. You know, I'm a huge football and basketball and baseball fan. I'm one of the last baseball guys, I guess, around here. But I really do like a good track meet, and I really do like the sprint relay, the 400 meter relay. I think it's my favorite thing in track. And we lost. We didn't win it. So.
Well, they were up against some stout competition.
Well, Jamaica's got some fast guys, yeah. But we got to get some faster ones.
All right. I will not ask you to do the Usain Bolt pose before we go here, but we are out of time. Governor Mike Beebe has been our guest for this edition of Talk Business. Thank you so much for your participation. Governor, thank you for being with us. Appreciate you doing
this. Good to see you.
We will be back next time with Senator John Bozeman. We'll let you know when the dates on that are going to be. Thanks for watching.